The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2022, Living Liberation, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, you can visit libraplanet.org/conference.
Welcome, everyone, to the room with the most gravitational pull. This talk is titled Repair is Not a Crime, an update from the front line of the right to repair fight. It will be presented by Kyle Wiens. Kyle is the CEO of iFixit, the free repair manual. He's dedicated his life to defeating the second law of thermodynamics and fought the battle in the courtroom as often as in the workshop. I'll pass it over to Kyle, and you're welcome to put your questions in IRC. You can ping me or Kyle, and we'll be happy to answer those.
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, super excited to be here. I've got IRC up, and I'd like to make this kind of as interactive and dynamic as possible. So I'll be watching your questions. Keep them coming. I want this to be fun. We spend enough time listening to people talk at us on small windows on our screen. So let's make it fun. Right to Repair is lighting off. We're making all kinds of progress. Fundamentally, the idea is that, hey, we should have the parts, tools, and knowledge to repair our stuff. Things also need to be fixable, but most of what I'm going to talk about today has more to do with parts, tools, and information, and we will get into the situation around design and another talk. You know, iFix is famous for our teardowns. We take apart all the new gizmos. I spent all day yesterday taking apart the new Mac Studio. And I'm going to tease you with that because you're just going to have to come back to iFixit next week to find out what's inside it. Kind of the origin of Right to Repair, and if you saw me talk last time, I apologize for going over this again. But for anybody that's new, so the origin of Right to Repair is in the automotive world. We have Right to Repair for cars going back, several decades. The very first auto Right to Repair law was the Clean Air Act. Which said that if you're going to make a car with all this fancy new emissions control equipment, that car manufacturers had to make the information on maintaining those systems available to independent shops. And that was a really important kind of moment to start getting more of this information available. It kind of became the default, but of course the local mechanic can fix anything, or it stayed the default. With computerized vehicles and software and everything, that started to change. And so Massachusetts in 2012 had a right to repair ballot initiative where they asked people, hey, do you want to force manufacturers to use a standard diagnostic interface? So this is the OBD2 port underneath your steering wheel. That is a standardized interface that is mandated by law. After the Massachusetts bill passed, the auto manufacturers agreed to apply that nationwide. So since then, we've been working on Right to Repair for lots of other things. As we're here at a conference talking about fundamental freedoms, one of the things that I really think we need to address is these warranty void if removed stickers on everything that sort of create this this perception that you have to ask for permission to do anything with your product. It's totally wrong. And I think that a large part of the sort of social perspective that we can't open up and tinker with our things actually comes from these warranty void if removed stickers. You know, people are used to following rules. I realize all of you probably are live your lives trying to break as many rules as possible. But most people are sheep. Most people like to follow the rules. And most people, when they see a warranty void for move sticker, are going to stop. Now, what's infuriating to me about this is I'll talk with someone and they'll say, yeah, I don't want to fix my thing because, you know, it'll void my warranty. And I'm like, well, if your warranty was still valid, why don't you just take it to the manufacturer to fix the thing? And there's this like mental block that just like having a rule that says we can't open our things, having the sticker on the product becomes this huge psychological blocker. Fortunately, these stickers are total rubbish. They're actually illegal. The Federal Trade Commission has requested that anyone that finds these stickers tell them about it. And they've set up a website for it. It's reportfraud.ftc.gov. Basically, if you void someone's warranty from them opening it, that is a violation of the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. The FTC actually sent a letter to Sony telling them to knock it off and stop doing that in that product, which is pretty cool. They also sent letters to Sony and Nintendo telling them to do the same thing. And then they launched an investigation into repair restrictions across the board, across many product families. They looked into agriculture equipment. They looked into Apple's monopoly on repair on iPhones. They investigated this across the board and released a report last year called "Nixing the Fix." So if you really want to get into this, it's a really fantastic report. Here, I'll post the link to this blog post I'm showing you in the chat, if you want to check it out. And I know you're all browsing the internet while you're listening to me talk. So if you could do me a favor and browse links I share with you, then you'll be learning three times as much as if I was just talking at you. Okay, so here's the report. It's great. You can click through this link and find the report. It kind of systematically goes through and talks about a lot of the things I'm going to talk to you about, the obstacles to repair. They don't sell parts. They use copyright restrictions to take service manuals offline. Someone in the chat says it reminds me of those mattress tags. Absolutely. Like, what the hell is the deal? Like, don't remove this tag. Like, come on. It's my damn mattress, right? I mean, what kind of world are we living in where, you know, labels on things are telling us what we can do with our lives? It's my thing. If I want to paint it purple or tear off the tag or anything else, I can and I will, and I'm going to do it. So as we embark on this right to repair fight, this is a worldwide fight. I was asking in the chat where people were at. We've got folks from Italy. We got folks from Canada. I was asking if there's anyone from Australia. I think it's probably a little too early there. But right to repair is lighting off globally. We've got, the Australian Productivity Commission has released a report similar to the, FTC report. Canada is working on a copyright fix that I'll talk about in a bit. In the U.S., we've got national right to repair bills, and I'll share some news on that. And then in Europe, the European Commission had a major vote on glue and batteries this week. So this really is a worldwide fight. Florida, we had a right to repair bill in Florida. It was ag focused, and I think Florida would be a really cool place to do an ag right to repair bill. So we'll get into kind of what that legislation means. From a design perspective, you know, designing things not to be glued together, the problem that we have is that if you're going to buy a product, you don't necessarily know how repairable it is up front. And so France has started rolling out this label. They're doing it on smartphones and laptops. Or if you go to a retailer in France, it's going to have a sticker on it with how repairable it is. And that includes everything we've been talking about. Is it designed to be disassembled? Are the parts available? Are the tools available? And this label really is starting to impact people's behavior. This is a survey that Samsung of all organizations commissioned. And it says 80% of people would give up their favorite brand for a more repairable product. So that's really cool. We've been able to take this thing mainstream. So this is an area that I think everyone in the free software movement would like to be a little bit more mainstream. We've been aggressive with this with right to repair. We've been able, I think, to be reasonably successful. This is a piece put out by the editorial board of the New York Times. So this is not just Kyle got an op-ed in the New York Times once, although I'd love to do that if you're watching, guys. But this is the full weight of the newspaper saying, yes, you should be able to fix your stuff. And people in Congress pay attention to this. People around the world pay attention to this. We have managed to make this a mainstream issue. I come from free software roots. I'm a software engineer. This is, you know, this is my passion. This is where I come from. But we had to identify a way of framing this issue to make it mainstream. And I think this headline kind of says it all, right? I mean, it's your iPhone. Why can't you fix it yourself? That appeals to conservative audiences. That appeals to progressive audiences. Everyone agrees with this. This is about digital inclusion. It's about bridging the digital divide. It's about fundamental ownership. It's my thing. Why the hell can't I do what I want with it? And so by maintaining that kind of bipartisan approach, we've consistently had success. There was an update to the Massachusetts law, so you folks at FSF headquarters maybe got a vote on this a couple years ago. This was around updating the OBD port to work wirelessly over the telematic data stream. So saying, hey, you can't use an encrypted signal over a cellular connection to lock consumers or independent repair shops out. You also have to make that a standard interface. And there is a lawsuit right now where the auto manufacturers have sued the state of Massachusetts to delay implementation of this. And we're expecting a verdict any day now. The judge was basically ready to rule and I think maybe do something that we didn't like. And then it turned out that Subaru was selling cars in Massachusetts where they had just turned the telematics off in order to comply with the law, which was something that the automakers said they couldn't do. And so then the judge is like, hey, you guys lied to me. What's the deal? And so I think he rewrote his opinion. We'll see. But the judge was not very happy with the automakers. Yeah, Kia turned it off as well. Absolutely. Here's the Australian government's report. I encourage you to check that out if you're interested in Australian copyright law. We have a fundamental problem with Section 1201 of the DMCA. Section 1201 is the anti-circumvention law. It says that it's illegal to bypass a lock put on a product that you own by the manufacturer without their permission. And that is a ridiculous law. And unfortunately, American imperialism being what it is, we've managed to export Section 1201 to different countries around the world. And so there's discussions in Australia and Canada and elsewhere to basically repeal that. And then finally, we have a bipartisan bill in Congress that was introduced by Representative Mondaire Jones and Victoria Spartz, who I think is the only Ukrainian member of the House of Representatives. She's a Republican. A bipartisan bill that they introduced that would add a permanent repair exemption to Section 1201, which we're really excited about. This is the Canadian bill, Brian May. So if you're in Canada, send him a nice friendly note. This was debated in the Parliament on the floor of the Canadian Parliament last year. This specific copyright fix, repealing Section 1201. I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of it is, but repealing the section of Canadian copyright law. And a conservative MP said on the floor that their perspective was this was a consensus issue, that they thought that they could get unanimous support for fixing this, which is awesome. That's what we want. Hasn't gotten done yet, but we're laying the groundwork. I should mention in Australia, I'm going to get the party wrong. One of the major political parties in Australia released their party platform yesterday, which included Right to Repair as part of their party platform. And also the Canadian Liberal Party has made Right to Repair part of their platform. And then the U.S. President Biden has also come out in favor of this. So that's pretty cool. And then we've had some major votes at the European Parliament. Here are bills that were introduced in 2021. I don't know if I have an updated map for 2022, but it looks kind of similar to that. We got really, really close in the state of Washington this year. So we've got kind of two different thrusts that we're working at with this. One is we are working on fixing that copyright issue. That really has to happen at a national level, at a federal level in the U.S. or at a Canadian Parliament. That's a national level issue. And then you have the right to repair bills, which is basically what they did in Massachusetts, saying, hey, you know, make parts, tools, and information available to consumers. And that is happening really at the state level in the U.S. is where we've seen the most momentum. There's a lot of traction there. So that's kind of your high level legislative update. I want to see if I can answer any questions about that. This is kind of our vision, is to reverse this trend, to get to a place where things are more fixable, where people are tinkering and fixing their stuff more. So ask me questions in the chat and let's have a little bit of a conversation. I am working very closely with members of the Repair Coalition from around the world. And I'm happy to kind of share some resources and point you guys to where to go to get involved, because we absolutely need help. I'm showing a lot of legislation that is in progress, but we haven't gotten any of it done yet. Section 1201 still is the law of the land. It's still illegal to share software that will enable people to fix their stuff. It's still, you can't get parts for an iPhone from Apple, despite them saying that they want to. They haven't done it yet. We still have a long way to go. So let's have a little bit of a chat. We're having meta IRC conversations here. Patrick is talking about different kinds of screws. Joseph is saying, let's see, that he wasn't able. Okay, so this is a conversation about Belkin surge protector. I can grab, I have here somewhere. One moment, let me grab my screwdriver set. Of course, it's not where I left it, but I've got, you know, my trusty iFixit screwdriver. So we sell our, we have our 32, 64, and 128-bit screwdriver sets, and we're constantly finding new gizmos and opening them up and finding and adding new screw heads. So if you find something that we're missing, let us know. I was doing a teardown. I was in Spain doing a teardown for a design conference, and they gave me a coffee maker to take apart. And I looked at the bottom and there were these round circles and I thought it was riveted together. And so I got out a drill and I was going to drill the rivets off. And I realized that they weren't actually circles. They were slight ovals. And there's an oval shaped bit that they use on coffee machines that is just absolutely ridiculous. So we put that in our 64-bit driver kit. Tom says, have you seen any traction on expanding the scope of right to repair to include the ability to flash bootloaders and software and devices that are no longer supported by the manufacturer? And you use the word traction, but I assume you're talking about devices in general and not just about tractors. We'd be open to discussion on this. I think the main thing that we need to do here is enforce the GPL correctly. Software Freedom Conservancy has a lawsuit against Vizio right now, where Vizio has been selling TVs and building an incredible amount of bloatware on there, including mandatory tracking and ads on that television using free software without sharing their changes. And I think that we need to interpret sharing their changes as you need the ability to take the source from Vizio, compile it, and install it on the TV. And if you cannot do that all the way through, then you're not fully in compliance with the GPL. And I think that we've seen companies in general just totally flout the GPL. So it's time to get back and kind of really get aggressive with enforcement and make sure that the right to repair, the rights ensconced in the GPL really need to include the ability to tinker with and modify software. So if I want to, if Vizio decides to build their TV on top of GNU Linux, cool. I should be able to take their source code, delete the bit of code that includes the tracking pixel, and compile and install on my TV and have it run. So I don't know that we need this into the right to repair legislation. I think what we need is stronger enforcement of the GPL. And the folks at Software Freedom Conservancy are making good progress on that. But I think we're going to need a lot more than just a lawsuit on Vizio to get this done. GNU 2 says, hey, I missed the part where you talked about service manuals. Are the manufacturers obligated to publish them fully, partially? Can we redistribute them somehow like we're doing on iFixit? Let me look at the link that you have here, documents. Oh, someone uploaded the Samsung service manual for the Galaxy S3. That's nice of them. So the way that the laws, the proposed laws are written is that if one of these state laws passes, the manufacturers have to make those manuals publicly available for free. I think there is a strong argument that the folks who uploaded the Samsung Galaxy S3 manual to iFixit are engaging in fair use, right? What is the incentive to, what is the benefit to society that comes from giving a monopoly on distribution to a manufacturer for a service manual? Copyright is there to incentivize, science and the arts. It's designed to incentivize creation of works that wouldn't be created otherwise. And service manuals generally are not in that category. And Gnu2 says this is also relevant for publishing schematics and hardware information. I mean, at a high level, like if it's a fact, you cannot copyright it. And the more factual information is, you know, technical diagrams, schematics, I think there's a strong argument that, that redistributing those is fair use. Patrick says, hey, what are your thoughts on the protection argument that gets mentioned? These measures protect people from harming themselves or breaking their equipment. Any ideas for rebuttal for this? Yes, it totally depends on the product. Honestly, most of the arguments that we hear against right to repair are all kind of red herrings. If you talk to, you know, normal people, and I'm not just saying people in the free software community, I'm saying like pick a random person off the street and say, hey, should you be able to swap the battery in your phone? They're going to say yes. Now, is it possible to hurt yourself doing that? Sure, you could, I don't know, get a screw in your eye or something, or you could maybe puncture the battery and catch the battery on fire. But there's lots of other things that you can do in your life that would catch on fire. You have a gas stove in your house, maybe. It's possible to blow your house up with that. If you change the battery in your car, it's big and heavy. You could drop it on your foot. But we are willing to accept some amount of risk for being a human and moving around in the world and having a house where we can cook food. So I'm not very convinced, and legislators generally have not been convinced by these safety arguments. How do you prevent people from breaking their equipment? Well, shouldn't it be my right to be able to break my equipment if I want? So I'm just going to get back to the beginning on this. That is, I mean, I think those arguments are fairly easy to dismantle. We also get cybersecurity arguments against right to repair. And those are, I mean, even more laughable. Like you're saying that by having your like secret, you know, obscure lock or diagnostic software that you're not going to tell anybody about, that you're more secure than if you made that available and you let the security community research it. Come on. I don't need to convince you guys of that one. We have another one here. As right to repair gains more support, do you foresee more companies following Apple's lead and making efforts to look like they're supporting it when they really aren't? Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Apple announced this parts program and took credit for it in November. They said that they were going to start making service parts and manuals available. They haven't done it yet. We're 5 months in. When's the last time Apple announced something 5 months before they released it? Like, they're generally pretty good at not launching vaporware. I think you definitely will see more companies make those kind of announcements. And so it's up to us to hold their feet to the fire and make sure that it actually gets done, to hold them accountable. And that's why we need legislation. Like, everyone agrees, even Apple is saying, yeah, it would be a good idea if we sold parts. Okay, cool. Then what's your problem with a law that mandates that? Let's set a floor that we can innovate from, rather than the current treadmill of obsolescence that we have, where just everything is disposable. Another question. Do you know about local associations fighting against programmed obsolescence like HOP? HOP is the Halt Obsolescence Group in France. They're just absolutely fantastic. Let me repost. Yeah, you're posting HOP's English page. HOP is amazing. And I actually have up here, I was going to share a report that HOP just released. Let's see if I can find this tab. They looked at the French Repairability Index, and they kind of did an analysis. They said, hey, we're a year into this, I'm looking for the window here. We're a year into right to repair, and what has the impact of that legislation been? If you want to get into the weeds, which I am with repair scoring, into the weeds of what's the difference between a 1.5 and a 3, this repair index is a fantastic tool. But like any new tools, there's opportunities to improve it. And so this group made a number of suggestions for making the grading system more ambitious. US PERG, which is a US NGO. So this is kind of the sort of an equivalent in the US. They released a report assessing and grading manufacturers, partially using the information from the French index. And they specifically zeroed in on one of the subscores of the French. One cool thing about the French score is they're not just releasing a number, they also release some of the calculations. And so PIRG was able to use some of those calculations to determine repairability in the US is different from France. I would say if you want to get involved and you want to learn more about what's going on, there's this wonderful Right to Repair newsletter that is put out. You can copy this, Earl. Or also Secure Repairs is the security research group. So these are some of the kind of world's leading cybersecurity experts that have signed on and said, hey, you know, we believe fundamentally in Right to Repair. And if you go over to their newsletter tab, they're the ones running this newsletter, Paul Roberts, Secure Repairs. While I'm sharing my screen, a few other things to note. Repair.eu is the European campaign for Right to Repair. These folks are absolutely awesome. Join, donate. They're amazing. They were substantially behind the big European Parliament vote this week, calling for removable and replaceable batteries. In the US, the organization is repair.org. On repair.org, just put this piece out calling for Congress to hold a full Right to Repair hearing in the Judiciary Committee. Lots of folks doing really great work right now. I didn't even know about this Massachusetts group. That's kind of cool. I wonder if this is the car one, as they have an SSL issue. Yeah, the Massachusetts one that you're pointing at, that is the group that is put together by the aftermarket auto repair folks. This is to champion the ballot initiatives that I showed you. NJB's talking about his Apple II from 1979, where the product came with a full circuit schematic. And wouldn't that be nice? It seems like that should be the default. The products come with security updates. So totally agree. Slackcoder says, what is the best printer to buy for openness and repairability? I have absolutely no idea. I couldn't tell you one. It seems like they're kind of the anti-open. If anyone knows, post it. But I couldn't make a recommendation. I guess I would say in lieu of manufacturer support for freedom, your best path is to find something that is kind of a commodity where there's a lot of them, so that you can, you know, find parts that are pulls from other groups. Any other questions? Super appreciate everybody. The other thing that I wanted to mention while I've got all of your ear is, I know there's been a lot of conversations with Free Software Foundation and kind of where the organization goes for governance going forward. I would like to use my position of privilege as a white male in this space to say, let's get some more diversity on the board. Let's add some more people. I think FSF should be moving aggressively to add more board members with more diverse backgrounds and perspectives. The success that we have had with Right to Repair is because we've made it very inclusive. We brought a lot of folks in. We've kept it very strictly nonpartisan. We have people from all over the place. The Right to Repair bill in Florida is being introduced by a woman legislator who is an amazing advocate who's focused on enabling farmers in her state. Across the board, we've seen like a really dynamic kind of inclusive environment. And I think in order for the free software movement to move forward, we're going to really need to make sure that we are an inclusive space where everybody feels welcome. And that starts with leadership and works its way down from there. Patrick, that's most of what I got. If there are more questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I can pass it back to you. Patrick, I'm not getting your audio.
Oh, it's me. Okay, I apologize for that. I apologize for that, everyone. I was just bringing up, I'd like to hear a little bit more of an update with the respects to like John Deere and those tractor companies. Has there been some progress? Because I remember that was one of the first things that I heard about when it comes to right to repair, farmers being stuck in fields. And
yeah, good question. So there's a handful of things. One, I can tell you that I have on very good authority that all John Deere tractors run on Linux now. And John Deere is not necessarily doing a very good job of sharing their source code. So maybe there's something that could be done with that. increasingly, these tractors have
I can't see right now. I'm not too sure.
Sorry, my internet cut out a second there. I'll be back here in a second. Apologies for that. My internet just glitched. So these tractors run Linux. They are touch screens. They are fully kind of sophisticated, self-driving, whatever. They have several computers in them. So there is there's a main ECU that's generally more of an embedded system. And then you have the display, which has a lot of the error codes that farmers want to get access to. And then there also is a GPS module and all these things where it's talking to the cloud. And each of those is a separate Linux computer. Right now, John Deere has not budged at all. You've seen all the momentum and discussion around right to repair, but there is very little actual progress. So this is why we need legislation to pass to force these companies to change. It is generally agreed that John Deere is being a monopolist and is shutting out independent repair to the point where, like last year, there was a lawsuit filed against John Deere on this, and then there was another lawsuit, and then there was another lawsuit. Last week, lawsuit number 10 was filed. These are all different class action suits. And so what you can, if there are 10 separate lawsuits on the same thing filed, what that means is that these class action lawyers see blood in the water. They know it's very clear that this is a monopolist practice. John Deere is going to end up paying hundreds of millions of dollars of damages and having to change their business practices. And it's just a matter of time. What we need to make sure happens along the way is that they fully release the source code that they've built their system on, and that we get a kind of broader rights to tinker and modify this equipment.
And relating to those lawsuits, is it they're kind of attacking at different angles the company, or is it all kind of the same sort of like a boilerplate legislative action?
So the lawsuits are basically saying, hey, John Deere, you're being a monopolist. You're harming farmers by limiting repair access. And specifically what they're doing is there's John Deere software that you need. It's called Service Advisor that you plug into the tractor in order to debug an error code. Maybe it's reset, the equivalent of rebooting it or resetting an error code on your car. The sort of thing that you can plug a reader into your car to do, farmers don't have access to that software. Instead, they have to hire the dealer to send someone out with the laptop to plug it in to say, oh, that's the sensor is bad. And John Deere has been using that lack of access to that software to enable a service monopoly for their dealer network. And that is kind of clearly monopolistic activity. The Federal Trade Commission has called them out for it. Now you've got these lawsuits proceeding. Unfortunately, the legal process takes some time. But it's very clear that they are abusing their monopoly position. And I would mention, by the way, by the act of manufacturing anything, you kind of are a monopolist around availability of parts and information, unless someone like iFixit comes along and reverse engineers your product and creates aftermarket parts. You made the thing, you own the IP to it. So that's something that society has to kind of push back on and create sort of safe lanes for people to be able to do what a Cory Doctorow likes to call adversarial interoperability, or another way to say it is competitive compatibility, right? Like other people should be able to make their own diagnostic software to connect to these tractors.
Yeah, that's actually brings up a great question from Gnu too, talking about, do you see a place for like free software taking over that aspect of creating software to do that repair?
Yeah, I would love to see you guys engage. So a project that I started, we call it Tractor Hacking. Everything we've done here is all GPL. This is basically, we've been grabbing every tractor we can get our hands on and dumping CAN bus values and posting it all on GitHub. You can go and grab the raw data. You can find the code that we've done tinkering with it. There's a lot of documentation for what we're seeing, how to connect to these systems. And then we had some students from Cal Poly write a little tool for, you know, scanning the CAN bus, and they were able to send values. So this is, we're kind of very much at the beginning, but my dream would be, and I guess my call for hackers here in the audience is, we would sure love to see an open source version of John Deere's Service Advisor be created so that farmers don't have to rely on the John Deere proprietary software to fix their stuff.
Makes sense. And in your journey with the tractors, tractor hacking, it looks like it's a little bit more focused to the John Deere. Have you found other manufacturers are more open to this collaboration?
They're all pretty locked down. John Deere has the bulk of the market share, so that's why we focus on them. But there is there's kind of a heavy equipment standard interface, CAN bus interface called J1939, that's sort of like the industry standard set of signals. And then every manufacturer builds on top of it. Kind of like Ethernet headers, you have your kind of basic ones, and you can imagine using some proprietary hex codes. So that's where we started posting some of the John Deere hex codes that we had learned about. We'll need to do that systematically across every manufacturer. Caterpillar would be another good one to do. It's just a little bit of a challenge because the people who are motivated and have the software skills are not necessarily the people that own the equipment. So bridging that gap, really the best thing that we can do is whoever has access to the equipment, grab live CAN bus dumps and then post it. And then the rest of us can tinker with it without having to be there sitting at the tractor. Apple had sent DMCA copyright takedowns to anyone that had posted their service manual online. They said, hey, it's our service manual. You can't have it. And I thought that was ridiculous. But I wasn't really ready for a legal fight with a very large corporation. And so I said, well, I'll just take it apart again, write my own service manual, put it online. And we've been doing that ever since. So now iFixit is the largest repair manual on the internet that I know of. Let me know if there's a bigger one. We are, systematically dismantling all kinds of products, and everything on iFixit is Creative Commons licensed. And
I was just being informed that the stream crashed, so we'll just hold short here.
Are we back?
Question being, tell us more about your beginnings, the start.
Say it one more time. We were trying to figure out how to fix things, couldn't find service manuals. Learned that the service manuals had been DMCA'd into oblivion and decided to make our own. And so I knew what Apple service manual looked like. I knew I didn't have it. And so I said, made my own. I just put it online for free. And people have been going to iFixit for ServiceNation ever since. Our goal is to build, a complete library of free service manuals for everything out there. So the next time you're taking something apart, take pictures, put it online, and you're part of the community.
A great way to close off today. Thank you so much, Kyle. It's been wonderful hearing you speak about Right to Repair.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. This was fun. Thanks, everybody.